Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here's your host of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to The Millennial Dentist.
Man, I really like that intro music.
Dude, full house tonight.
Absolutely.
Full house.
Absolutely.
We got the old guy in the
Wait
house.
A second now.
Live from Music City, Nashville.
The Trump rally is right down the road. We had to fight traffic to be here, but we're all here.
We are making dentistry great again.
Yes. Absolutely. Make dentistry great again.
So we got a Holsinger in the house.
Good to be here, everybody.
Dr. Payray.
Yep.
And my dad.
Good to be here.
Rick Sullivan in the house. We're excited about you being here, Pops, and to kind of get your take and kind of how it's been working with a millennial and kind of the transition and growing a practice. And
that's pretty much what I'm like. I want to really talk about this because it's. I want Sully to not talk as much because I want.
Good luck.
Okay, so this is the deal.
You lead it.
I come from a completely different background. Like I had no dentist in my family. Nobody's dentist. I have a lot of medical doctors, but no dentist. And where I always wondered in dental school, and I don't know, Daniel, what you thought of. The people or the students that they came to school that their parents, either their dad or mom, were dentists. Because I always wondered, how is there, were they supposed to be doctor? What did they really want to be dentist? Or did they...
Yeah, were they betrothed to dentistry?
Right. Yeah.
And that, he will be a dentist.
So that's one thing. There's just so many questions I have today to ask Rick and Sully. Actually, I want to interview them both with Holsinger. We're going to sit back and just keep asking questions.
It's been good. Well, first off, Payman, I do want to, before we jump into that, I want to hear about your weekend. You just got back from an awesome trip, out west, doing some pretty cool stuff with the implant pathway guys. So tell us about that. Tell us what you did.
It was an awesome, awesome weekend. A lot of work, a lot of implants. We placed 218 implants in 3 days, among 12 dentists that we were training in Arizona. Now, it's called the CAS Dental, Central Arizona Shelter Services. It's one of the biggest in Arizona. And what they do is they have a Brighter Way dental clinic there that they help the homeless veterans with their dental work. And they also give shelter to homeless while they're trying to find jobs and things like that. So when we went over there, I had no idea. We started, the implant pathway Dr. Justin Moody had started talking, and he's been doing a couple of courses over there live. And he asked me to go and join him with him and then the faculty being teaching affordable dentures group this week or the weekend, past weekend, but also in the future, it'd be more of in private course. So I have a lot of friends of mine that are asking me hey, can I come to this course? I'm like, of course you could come because there's ton of dentistry, live surgery. We did, like I said, 216, 218 implants. We also did, that was over $500,000 worth of dentistry done in 3 days because we also have a lab over there. We do dentures. So they had it set up. It was awesome because we would do full mouth immediate load. Dr. Moody did a very good job of Teeth Express case there with the immediate load. We did a ton of upper and lower full mouth extraction and implants placement immediate on people that needed most.
And one of the cool things I thought, I just seeing y'all's pictures and whatnot, the restorative part is such an awesome, because that was where I went and took my course.
Sure.
It was great. I learned how to throw in a bunch of screws, but like you said, now you got to come back and restore these. I love how y'all got to take part in kind of the restorative process and see how that works.
That's what we did. We did locators. We had how to show them retrofitting, what size, what abutments, what cover. Because those are some of the things you don't really learn in school, or you don't even learn it in Mexico or some of the other courses, Dominican. You don't. And over there, you are pretty much waiting to see what they're going to give you and throw at you, and you have no idea. You sleep at night and like tomorrow, like what am I going to go through tomorrow? So that implant pathway, the group, they have done a crazy good job as far as Dr. Joe Maronfar, he does the treatment planning, pre-treatment planning before the, we go over there. So we have 3D there. In the house, we have it there. We could look at the 3D and take a look at them and treatment plan. So it was a very cool weekend.
Awesome,
I want to do it just like a whole episode it's going to be awesome.
Well, Pops, why don't you just? We kind of need to hear your story a little bit, and then you tell your story, and then I'm going to shut up and let them ask questions and butt in.
Got out of dental school in 1988. Native Nashvillian, went to Montgomery Bell Academy, went to Rhodes College for 3 years, was pre-med all the way through. Had actually worked at a hospital for 2 summers, wanted to be a surgeon. And then one night went to a little pre-med meeting and the speaker kept getting buzzed and had to leave to go take call. And I thought, you know, there's more to life than this. Came home, called my father, came home that weekend, applied to dental school the next weekend, got accepted a few weeks later and left Rhodes after 3 years, went on to dental school. And dad always told me to be a periodontist. So I did all my prerequisites, was actually accepted to perio school and decided to not go that route to come practice with him.
Yes.
And
super GP.
Super.
The last conversation I actually had with him was telling him I was going to come practice with him. And then he was killed in 1987 in a hunting accident, fell out of a deer stand, which was my senior year of dental school. It was September. Of that year. I'd just been married about 4 weeks. So life kind of changed a little bit for me. So I never got to practice with him as a dentist, but I spent many an hour with him, you know, on the weekends, nights, holidays, whatever. His father was also a general dentist, practiced for 65 years here in Nashville. His brother, my uncle, still practices here in Nashville.
Wait, did you just, how long?
My grandfather practiced for 65 years.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
I was like, wait a second.
If I live to be 65, I think that'd be a win.
Did he go to University of Tennessee?
So all 4 Richard Hugh Sullivans graduated from University of Tennessee College of Dentistry.
Awesome. You teamed out. Represent. So, okay. So that was your grandfather.
That was my father's father, my grandfather.
That did 65 years worth of dentistry.
My mother's father was an oral surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And he was chief of oral surgery at UT as well in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And actually, when he died in 68, he had liver cancer and died on the table there. He was late, young. He was in his 50s.
Sure.
And L.C. Templeton. And oh, so okay. The dental clinic, oral surgery clinic, is named after
him. Oh, yeah.
Him.
Now, yeah, that rings a bell. Wow. So this is, I had no idea. Like any, I know so much about you right now that I've researched, but this part that you just brought up, it gave me chills.
It's like the Kennedy family of dentistry almost.
I mean, that is incredible, especially the fact about like, because you have such a great success to me where I look at you guys, you and Soli working together. I wanted to always connect and try to see how, connect the dots, like see what is it working? What is this chemistry? How does it come about? And I'm looking at, you said you never got a chance to practice with your father.
Not as a licensed dentist.
And you have Soli that to join you. So I feel like that is what you give and how this relationship is working in such a great way. Because I see it from outside and I'm like, man, this is amazing, the chemistry. And that's what the Millennial Dentist is about. The whole podcast is about bringing the old generation, the baby boomers and the millennials together.
We're going to talk about this old generation thing here a little bit.
Yeah.
I hear you.
So it's amazing. I love it. It's there's full of experience and strength there is. Now, I want to bring up some of this, like I've seen, because you're one of the No, I wouldn't say few, but you are out there as far as the whole technology. Like you're with, you did the Panky Institute twice.
Yes.
You've gone with Mish Institute. You have done Spears, Coys, and the first dentist to have intramural scanner in Nashville, the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And you have two milling machines, Sarah,
yes,
in the house. And I see, I mean, this is amazing. It can't get better. And you have a laser. You have, you train people also, help train people.
Yep. I've have two lasers currently, the water laser MD and the perio lase. And I've had two lasers prior to that. I had a diode, which I sold on eBay. And I had a plasma arc curing laser that we used to cure composites with that never really cured them as well as we thought they did.
Yeah.
Plasma.
About the size of a suitcase.
Sure. And that is, what do you keep up with the with the technology? Like, what is your reasoning behind it? Why do you keep up? Like, why don't you just stick to
like
one?
The normal guys.
Right. Like, I mean, why don't you? Yeah.
Well, each with lasers, what every laser has its
okay,
use.
Okay, here's my question, I guess, to reward it. How would you make somebody like your friends who are not doing anything like you're doing, how would you encourage them and motivate them to come back? I mean, to do stuff, to invest in the things, to.
Well, I have a pretty good addiction to the Section 179. Sully will tell you, for those who have been to the tax podcast that y'all may or may not have done yet. So I tend to always try to jump on the new equipment. I try to be out there, but I also try to look at the science behind it and see what it will bring to my office, what it will bring to my practice, what it will bring ultimately to my patients. First technology I had was the Fuji Denacam back in the 90s, which was about $35,000. It was an intraoral camera that
oh my
I actually
God.
Put.
$35,000 back in the 90s.
And it looks like a TV. I'll show you the picture. It's like a box. It like had, a box TV.
Okay, so this is the
We'll
thing.
Upload the picture.
Yeah, we're going to put, and I'm going around the office today. I'm so amazed and impressed by the whole thing. I have pictures of like, even before I entered, there's a nice picture, dedication plaque that he has written, the building dedicated to the memory of my earthly father, Dr. Richard Sullivan, and in honor of my heavenly father, Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And this is just behind, I mean, there's so many cool stuff in here. There is a hallway that has Sully's honors and diplomas and everything, and also Dr. Sullivan Richard. So, I mean, this is incredible. These pictures are going to be uploaded for Millennial
Dinner. Website,
yeah, to the website. And it's incredible. Holsinger?
Yes. I've been on Instagram. I've been trying to capture this moment for everybody. So
no, that's awesome.
Lost me there. Are you on Instagram?
Of course I am.
Okay, what's your Instagram here? I got to add you here.
TN Gunmaster. Has nothing to do with industry.
Gunmaster. That's awesome. So you, one of the things also is that you're a gun collector.
I am.
Tell me about it.
Oh, gosh.
So how did you start? Like, okay, so you said your dad hunting.
Yeah, I've been into guns my whole life.
Sure.
And at some point I realized, found a little website called Gunbroker.
Gunbroker.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that legal?
Yeah.
Everything's legal. Depends on who you ask. Okay. And just started collecting primarily Smith & Wesson and Colt sure. revolvers from the 40s and 50s.
Wow.
And that has grown. And cool. You can see by my artwork around the office here.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's incredible. We're going to put
x-rays of guns.
Those are x-rays right, of guns?
My job is to keep us on task. Wow. Okay. So you graduate. Obviously, you came right into this practice by yourself. So whereas, you know, I've come in with you, your plan was to, that obviously was a dramatic turn. And you kind of were on your own. So
Dad, at the time, my father in late 87, when he passed away, he had three assistants and three hygienists. He was running six chairs. He had been to Pankey. He was very well renowned. He was very active in the Tennessee Dental Association. He was actually secretary of the TDA when he passed away. Linda Miles was a good friend of his from the consulting world. And she described my dad as a rabbit on roller skates. And she described most dentists as either rabbits or turtles. So that's the kind of practice that I grew up in. Dad was a heavily crowned and bridge. He did all of his oral surgery. He did all of his perio. He did all of his endo. At one point, he was going to specialize in endodontics in the late 60s before it became a specialty and ended up not, stayed with general dentistry there too. And so I kind of came into the background of everything but orthodontics. His best friend was an orthodontist who did my braces. So the kind of joke with Dad was he couldn't bend a wire if you had to, and I was sort of the same way. And
then I say that's still the same.
And that's still the same. That hadn't changed. So Sully comes in and he's brought in 6 months smiles, but that's right. We'll talk about that as we get along. And so I got a school. A member of Dad, my father's friends, kind of kept the practice going, volunteered their time, which was really an awesome thing they did until I got out of school. At that point, my mother hired a consultant. She valued the practice. And then we brought on a partner, and he and I were partners for about 3 years or so. This would have been 88 through maybe 90, 91 or two. And then it kind of ended a little bit lopsided. I started doing more production than he did, and he ultimately just took his equipment and patients and a couple of staff members and went down the street. And it was a friendly parting. It wasn't anything bad. We still see each other and maintain a relationship today. So from about 92 on, I was a solo practitioner until 2015 when the young Jedi decided to join the practice.
So now Sully was born in 80.
Yeah. So 88. His dad died. Uh-huh. He graduated dental school and I was born within 12 months.
Sure. That's because I'm kind of relating the time. Wow. Trying to look at the timeline in my head.
Wow, can you imagine right now?
Is that? Yeah. Like, wait a minute. What year? So in 88, he was born. And 92, 93, you started working as Solo.
Yes.
Practice. Now, did you have any mind like you wanted Sully to be a dentist?
You know, my father never pressured me.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, it was one of the greatest joys of his life that I chose to do that and was successful at it. I was number two in my class, and he knew that. And I was kind of a gunner.
Uh-huh.
I'll admit that. And
kind of a gunner. You're number two. You're a gunner.
That's a gunner, yeah.
Well, one guy ahead of me wanted to go to ortho school, so he did better in the first 2 years than I did. But clinically, I finished most of my requirements after my third year. So clinically, that was never much of an issue. And so I came into the practice and really just picked up, just sat down and went to work. Once he passed away and the dentists were helping dad work, helped the practice keep going, UT let them become associate faculty members. And I was actually able to come up here and work in the practice under these guys' auspices while I was still in school.
Oh, wow. That's great.
It was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, that is really neat.
So, Sully. Now, when was the first time you thought that you're going to join?
And I'd echo his sentiments as far as for me, because really, I never, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was an ecology major. You know, I was like, let's hang outside and have a good time and whatnot. And then, but ultimately, you know, you kind of realize, okay, you're good at math and science. You want to help people. You know, I love the work-life balance that a dentist has to offer, and we're really close, you know, so the opportunity to go work with him was kind of, so the next thing you know, here I am, but he never pressured me at all.
So that's what I want to get to, because what you guys are going through, there's a lot of, now, you guys have a great chemistry, and that's awesome how it works, but I also know, I'm sure Holsinger knows, that there are friends of ours and colleagues of ours that they can't do that with their dad. They don't have that relationship. And I'm trying to see what are some of the things that you guys could help those people or some of the ones that like to make this relationship work. Because ultimately what Millennial Podcast is about is making...
It's blending the generation.
Blending the generation, bridging the gap. With you guys seeing this practice, seeing the success of you guys being fifth generation dentists and working so close, because there's got to be a secret. What is it that you guys could give to those people?
You've got a great quote.
I do have a great quote.
So I won't steal your thunder.
The quote actually was told to us by Mike Abernathy from Summit Practice Management, who did our transition.
Great guy.
And his comment to us was, the older dentists have a sense of... I just lost it.
You just blew it.
It was teed up.
It was
right there.
I just missed the softball.
It'll come back to you.
I think Ryan's of ego.
Okay. Yeah,
thank you.
Yes.
The older dentists have a sense of ego, and the younger dentists have a sense of entitlement.
Bingo.
Yep.
And that's that. Those two.
The older dentist ego and the younger dentist entitlement becomes the biggest source of, between
the wall,
between
the bound, right. the thing that they
because
feel
we
like,
do, right?
Sure.
Millennials are bad about thinking we want it now,
we
think we've earned it.
Right.
When we have
Give it to me right now.
Yeah, I mean, you wanted to buy into the practice about your third day here.
Right.
Right.
You know,
and that's how it is. That's what we were. Mm-hmm. It's funny because this past weekend we were talking with Meisinger president, Alex Miller, the same exact thing, because I was telling him, hey, he has a great, I mean, he's got sons that every one of them is successful, very successful, like national champion skiing, and every one of them in a different category and different theme. And I was asking him like, hey, what do you think about us millennials? And how do you like
relate.
Yeah. And the thing is this, what you said, that they're not ever pressuring them. I giving them room and freedom.
Giving him room. And he will tell you all through high school, junior high, you know, my wife says my tombstone is going to read, they'll be fine. Because I always give both of my kids just enough rope to hang themselves. I was there if they needed me, but I let them be themselves. I didn't micromanage. I didn't try to control. I let you blossom into your own personalities.
And I think that's a hard part. So we extrapolate that to dentistry, right? Because it's been the exact same thing. When I came in here, you know, he would allow me to screw up. Like he would. And I think that's hard for a lot of older dentists who have associates who it's not their son or daughter, because it's like, these are my patients. So like, you don't want them to screw up on your patients, right? At the same time, he was kind of like, he wasn't going to let me do something that was out of my ability, But at the same time, he was going to let me ask for help, if that makes sense. So by him allowing me to kind of ask for help or fail, so to speak, kind of created this environment where I felt very comfortable coming to ask for help, and then in turn made it grow. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And also when you're talking, I'm thinking of the background of the technology and the things, because your dad is with the generation that he's in, but also keeping up with what is in the office right now existing. He gets it. He gets it.
He's the outlier.
Right. And that's the thing. We're like 3 years from now, if you come here, we probably have so many different gadgets and toys here, 3D printing. And
we'll probably have three or four more practices if we keep going at this rate.
So that's okay. Great point. You just brought up.
So let me add a little bit to what he said. One of my buddies just hired an orthodontic associate, and this guy's got a super duper successful orthodontic practice, and I've been referring to him for years. He did your braces, and I said, you know, the biggest thing you're going to have is, because you are such a micromanager, is realizing you've got to give this young doctor room, a chance. You've got to, you know, he's a doctor, he's graduated, he's got his own insurance, he's got his own stuff, let him go. Don't hire him if you don't see eye to eye. But you realize, and you have to keep that communication open. His first 8-10 weeks, we would come in here, and we've got a 52-inch LCD monitor in our office. We would sit here after work and pull up bite wings, intraoral pictures, whatever we'd done throughout the day, and we would talk about it. And we would say, okay, that looks great, that looks great. Well, would you feel that? Would you not feel that? You know, his first 8 weeks, he probably did 200 MODs. So,
yeah, because you graduate and you're like wanting to diagnose every etch.
Wait,
like,
what is what's MOD?
Yeah.
It's what your associate does. But I knew just from life and just through my own personal experiences that I'd had about control and trying to micromanage, that the best thing I could do for him was let him do his thing. And have faith in him to do well. I knew he'd been trained. I knew he'd won a big award at graduation. I knew he knew what he was doing, was to give him that opportunity to grow.
Give him the room.
And then when he came for help, the biggest thing was not to shame him, belittle him, embarrass him in front of staff members. You know, I've had to pull out root tips. I've had to fix root canals. I've had to get people numb. Nothing pisses him off worse, can I say that, than the hygienist then misses the block. He misses the block, and then I go get him numb.
It's happened like one time.
That's
maybe
three. That's the millennial, though. Millennial. Yeah. I mean, tell me this. Okay, so you have everything you're telling me, because it's solely like I see his growth, like from the time of graduation, because we went to school together, and seeing him now growing so rapidly with this, and it reminds me, like with my Dr. Burton, when I came to the practice of doing all this, that the same thing that you just said about Sully doing that, giving the chance, and that's what Dr. Burton did for me.
Yeah, look what you've done.
And that's what I think, honestly, like, look at this, the opportunity, the freedom of letting us do our thing, at the same time be watching us, do not belittle or do not micromanage, and talk. I think a lot of it comes to communication. Now, how often do you guys talk about either case, patient, treatment plan, or the accounting and the day, like the production, income, and everything?
90% of our conversations during the day are about patients and treatment planning. I'll get home at night, my wife will go, you know, tell me that his wife said they were doing something. I'm like, I don't know, I hadn't talked to him. You know, we don't talk. When we talk, it's generally about
teeth,
what we see on the screen.
And you'll get this too, Peyton. Yeah. We're also seeing being trained differently a little bit from how they were trained. And so, like, we also now have we have a different perspective on stuff.
Right.
So, you know, we're talking a lot more about, like, you know, the implants, you know, fixed hybrids versus bridges, saving teeth versus going to implants, you know, and there's a lot more discussion happening to where it's great having other opinions.
Oh yeah.
And you know, and patients actually like it too. Like, we'll play off each other a little bit. We'll be like, hey, you know, we got another dentist, let's get his opinion.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And that's a luxury. And I miss it right now so much more than before. Cause like I was always going, hey, what do you think about this? And because the way they look at it is also goes back to what they learned in school and they saw, and maybe they give you a couple pennies or 2 cents.
And the fact that he's got 30 years of experience.
Absolutely.
And that's be like
incredible.
In some of these cases that we're talking about, there's, you know, we had a guy in here yesterday we're going to end up doing some extractions on the anterior bridge work that's finally failing. But he came to me as a perio patient in significant distress in 1996. I did a 7 or 8 unit anterior bridge, basically bicuspid to bicuspid. It's lasted 20 years. So, you know, he trusts me. He believes it. So now we're going to take it out, do bone grafting, do some provisional partials, and go forward with that. And we were talking about, Sully was talking about, you know, do we want to go ahead and go do a
this is the case I was talking about
hybrid.
Going with the molars.
Yeah. Oh, saving the molars.
But we're going to, you know, but his molars are good. And I said, I'm going to save his molars.
Absolutely.
I said,
yeah.
You know, this is what we've done this far. And he's scheduled. You know, we gave him the fees. He's scheduled. He's ready to go.
Awesome.
You know, so, but we're able to have that discussion. And oftentimes, Sully will be in the hall because that's where we have our big monitor.
Hall next Singer
to,
getting more beer, classic.
We have a big monitor in the hall next to the cone
sure.
beam.
Yeah.
And he'll be in there with the discussion with the case. A lot of times, I'll kind of walk up and just stand behind. And sometimes he'll invite me in. Sometimes I'll just drift off. But I think it gives the patient a certain sense of comfort knowing that I'm kind of looking, especially if it's somebody that I've known a long time and he's proposing, you know,
so
extensive
that's the
treatment.
Thing, what you just said. Now, you said you've seen a lot of these patients, but sometimes Sully is coming and taking over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you feel about that? Because that's something that I'm sure, for example, me, after 20 years of me seeing this patient, and I see, like, how do you tell
like
me
yesterday,
about it?
Lady's missing her, congenitally missing her maxillary cuspids. She okay. had baby cuspids, and they fell out years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Sully puts two implants in both the maxillary cuspid positions. And finally convinced her yesterday to do four veneers when he does his two crowns.
I was going to restore the
absolutely that's
the
awesome.
And I walk in there and I said, Debbie, I've been trying to do this to you for 20 years, and you letting him do it. And I'm just cutting up with her because I'm thrilled.
Sure,
but and here's what
but
I want to touch.
We play off of each other.
Why? But I want to touch base because it's easy for the listener to say, okay, well, that's fine. He's your son. You want him to succeed. You want to. But it's financially working for both of us.
Absolutely.
Right now, very well.
And that's
like,
the thing.
Like
we're
Dad will
talk
tell you
about.
Because ultimately, like. Dad is pumped that I get that person to do that case because that's more chair time of me doing something. And there's what we've basically done is there's so much to go around that if you're you know in an associateship or you're an older dentist and you're worried about giving, you know, do I want to hire an associate because do I want to worry about that? Do I want to lose patients to them? You know, Dad was giving me stuff at the beginning. And that was not because he knew it was hard for me to come by. But what happens is our overhead starts decreasing because now we've hired maybe a couple staff members, but not a ton. We're doing more dentistry. You know, the light bill is still the same. The Comcast bill is still the same.
Tell me about this for our listeners that don't know this. I want to learn about the growth that you guys had ever since Sully has come into the practice, the numbers, because the numbers speak volumes.
Well,
my
biggest concern was, am I going to be busy enough to, in essence, have two doctors eat from the same plate? And what I didn't realize, two doctors were not going to be eating from the same plate. Each doctor was going to go through the buffet line with his own plate.
Sounds delicious.
You're going to have to.
In other words, we grew the practice. We didn't half it. Dead silence in the room.
We're millennials. We got to process that.
So what I mean by that is,
you're kind of like, okay, so you pretty much got two plates instead of one to half it. You got two plates and you have two doctors.
Yes. In other words, I think the common misconception amongst most.
We just grew the amount of food that was there.
Sure.
Amongst most guys my age. I'm 53. I've been practicing since 1988. So do the math. And I think most guys in my generation, they're concerned if they bring in somebody, will there be enough work to go around? And that was a concern for mine. But what I learned was when I brought him in, we grew the work to do.
Do you think, is that also because now you had somebody, you had Sully while he was going to dental school, you were working and you probably in the back of your mind thinking like he's going to come. So like the way that you have structured your office, it was to where you were ready for that individual to come in. Now he would.
I had been running at capacity for 5 or 6 years, kind of busting my butt.
And what's
butt.
Capacity? Tell me a little bit.
I was doing 4 days a week, three hygienists, two operative chairs. So these had five chairs. So three hygienists full time, 4 days a week. I had two assistants full time, 4 days a week, and two front desks, 4 days a week. And my collections for probably the last 5 or 6 years before he got here were probably 1.4 to 1.5 million.
Mm-hmm. By yourself.
By myself.
Mm-hmm. And that was a consistent number. So like that's when, because if you look back in hindsight, it's like, okay, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, it was very close within the degree because there's only so much dentistry you can do in a day, right? I mean, you're booked you're filled. You got three hygienists booked, so you don't really realize the amount of dentistry you could be doing.
Now, were you doing some of these implants in production?
I was only restoring implants in that production. I didn't start placing them again until last January of 2016 when he came in here and said, if you don't start doing these, I'm going to do them. Because I had such a surgical background. So I went up in...
Well, that was my thing. I was like, there's not a wisdom tooth that I've seen him refer out since I've been alive. So I was like, that's 10 times harder than placing an implant.
Yeah.
I was like, if you're not going to do this, like I said, I was like, absolutely. I'm going to do it.
So I went and got kind of retrained. He went down to the foundry and got trained. And so since we've done that, we've probably
I'll tell you, I got the numbers
He's
right
got
here.
The
I'll
numbers.
Tell you what we did last year. Well, give me a second.
But in the 12 months that since his start to finish, the first 12 months, we probably added $1 million in the practice.
Yeah. You did 46 implants. Wait a second. Excuse me. You did 84 implants last year. You did zero the year before. And then I placed, hold on, this is live, 32 implants. And I started placing them in June.
Yeah.
So about half the year I placed 32.
So now that production, that $1 million production that was added, you think, I mean, definitely implants, right?
It was implants. It was endodontics. It was new patients. It was crown and bridge. It was everything. He brought in some 6 month smiles. He went and took that course before he graduated, which was pretty funny. So he's down there with a bunch of dentists, and he's still a senior in dental school. But what that allowed him to bring something to the table that I didn't do. And then he also went and did the pinhole graft technique with Dr. Chow out in L.A. That's been something he's been able to bring. So that's, you know, $150,000-$200,000 right there that he was able to pull out of the practice that was either not getting done or we were referring out.
And so, like, you know, endo is a great thing. A lot of endo walks in your door, but if you're busy and you're booked, you can't just clear your schedule for endo. If you have an emergency and they're hurting, you can't just be like, well, why don't you schedule for next week? You got to send them an endodontist, right? So in 2014, Dad did a total of 30 root canals. He did 30 root canals in 2014. That's it. The endodontist really liked us. And then if we go to...
You did that because of the time.
Patient would come in, abscess tooth, mm-hmm. toothache, and...
Because you were so restorative.
I was busy. I already had...
Or you just adjusted their bite.
Yeah. Right. Did a lot of that. Until I bought a cone beam and realized I'm just kind of just throwing water on the fire. But I was busy. You know, I didn't have time. I didn't have an hour and a half block or a two-hour block in my schedule to do that. And so I would refer them out to the endodontist.
How many did I say you did?
24, 30.
Okay. He did 94 root canals last year.
But that went from 32
to 94.
To 94. So
well, hold on. And that's not counting how many root canals I did. This I didn't do six. This is also, we'll do another episode on why everyone should have a cone beam or why endodontists should
still
buy a cone beam.
Still looking for working week for there.
30.
Try to get that checked
30,
off.
41. That's 30 plus. That's 41. I did 57 root canals.
57 root canals.
So it went from 32 root canals in 2014.
To 140.
To 140 root canals.
Wow. That's incredible.
So you want to know how you add production.
So that's, just do the math.
So are you guys also using the cone beam for the root canals before?
Every day.
Sure. So that's another great way because you look at the axial view, sagittal, cross-section, and everything.
The numbers that I told you were before the cone beam.
And this cone beam, let's talk about it because I want more and more people, general dentists, to start thinking about it. And okay, so you first of all, you have a Sirona.
Yes.
And how much did that cost?
Sirona?
Orthofoss XL Sully, it cost what? About, you know,
about 120.
G's. Well, for our listeners that don't know, right now, they don't cost that much. Right now, they could get even. I mean, anything. I mean, they could get Carestream. They could get iCAD. It's not really about the brand. I don't want to, like, we're not bragging about what we have, Sirona, Galileos, or
We're
iCAD.
Brand loyal, obviously, for the integration purposes. But right. But if we just talk about cone beam in general.
Cone beam in general, for example.
And full disclosure, Sirona rep bought us dinner at the Mexican place a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that's it.
We like Sirona.
So the cone beam, you spent that much on it. Are you having did you finance it?
Yes.
Okay. And now are you looking at the monthly? Tell me, I want to break down. So you told me $130,000 a month.
Bingo.
That is the secret.
So I want to know how much monthly you charge for your 3D x-ray? Or like, well, break it down to the numbers. I want to see how much would you spend, like, if you financed it.
Let him tell you the way he thinks when he buys stuff here, like this.
Okay. That's yeah, the way I think when I buy technology.
Because okay. I think this is how more dentists should think about technology.
When absolutely. I first bought my first technology, let's go back to the Fuji Dentacam. Mm-hmm. It was $35,000. It was $700 a month. This is back in the 90s when interest rates were higher.
Uh-huh.
If I could sell one crown a month by taking an intraoral picture, I paid the note.
One crown a month.
Any dentist that I know of that's worthy of their license with an intraoral camera, if they can't sell 10 crowns a month, and I use the word sell, I don't mean that in a high pressure type deal. No, that's sure. not how I operate.
Absolutely.
I mean, educate the patient, whatever. But that takes your patient education to an exponential growth.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an easy decision. People go, oh, it's a $35,000 camera. Yeah, it is. But I just had 10 crowns that would not have committed to a point. They just did it because now they get it.
They
and I have
it.
Pictures of broken teeth. It. They can look at it. We all know what the intraoral camera's done. Same thing with any kind of technology. When I bought my first water lays, it was, you know, about $1,000 a month. If I could do one or two frenectomies a month, I paid for it. You know, in a,
and then you market them too.
I market with that. It hits me on the cutting edge. Periolase. Oh my gosh. That's a $100,000 laser. The training is phenomenal. I have billed out over $1 million in osseous surgery since
awesome.
I bought that in 2007.
Wow. So what exactly do you, what are some of the procedures? Now, do you do medical cross-coding with those too?
I don't.
Okay.
I do. We've done some medical cross-coding with the cone beam.
With minimal success.
With minimal success.
But that's partly but where that's, we are in Tennessee, I think.
That's another discussion, another podcast. But what I've done, I've looked at the technology and basically said, not so much the total company. I get the 179 write-off, which is a no-brainer. But also, I look at what is it, what's the monthly note, and what's it going to generate for the practice? Whether it's CIRAC, you know, CIRAC, the break-even number is at this point, it's what, 7 or 8, 9 crowns a month? If you're not doing that with your CIRAC unit, you're wasting your time. But we will tell you, I got a note from my lab last month in that statement because we bought the zirconia miller and their zirconia oven from CIRAC. So we now have 2 millers and 2 ovens. And my lab bill for my PFMs and zirconias went from about $6,000 a month. It was $500 last month.
So year to date, okay, so we're in early March. Not counting implant crowns, just your normal crowns. Dad's done, let's see, he's done 57 CIRAC crowns and 1 lab crown. I've done 65 CIRAC crowns and 5 lab crowns. So if we just say, if we take $100, which is a super cheap lab bill for a crown versus a $30 block, we multiply whatever 150 crowns times $70. That's how much we've saved so far this year.
And that doesn't count the excitement patients have when they
the
walk out
building.
With their crown an hour and a half, 2 hours later. And these zirconium crowns are fitting as good as any PFM you will ever do.
How did
you know you're old when you reference it to a PFM?
How did you do the training on the CIRAC? Now, for the people that think about, like, how much training did it take from your time? And I'm right now when we're doing this, I want to record this.
Get a little,
live
yeah, get
Instagram.
A little live recorder.
So, when I bought my full house in the house.
When I bought the original CIRAC, I had the red cam.
So, welcome to the Millennial Dentist.
Yeah, yeah.
Show the guns on the wall. Show the guns on the wall. There's my guns and my X-rays. All right,
keep going.
Keep going on topic.
We got.
When I bought the original Red Cam, they had just come out with the CIRAC Doctor's website, and I spent a weekend with my laptop up at my lake cabin watching the videos that Sam, Peary, and Armin did. Came in the next week when they delivered it before I had my training and did 2 crowns on a guy, and he's still wearing those crowns.
And that was what year?
2007.
I think that, you know, Serona's expensive. CIRAC's expensive. It's more than E4D. The Combi was expensive. It's more than the Kodak, the Carestream, all that. I describe it like you're buying from Apple. If there's an intangible access of information and resources that you get that is unmatchable, basically. So, you know, if you look at, like, let's just say dental forums and information, Dental Town's in the biggest forum in the world, right? Well, CIRAC Doctors is the next biggest one. And I mean, it's huge. And you could post any case, anything on there and get you know, feedback within minutes. So there's a lot of good. So that's kind of the beauty of what we found with that. I don't even know. How would you get on the CEREC tangent? I would say technology. Yeah.
Technology in general.
Now, of course. Now, let's talk about this also. I mean, CEREC is one. There's E40. There's all kinds of stuff. So we're not trying to promote. That's the thing.
Right. We would promote technology, right?
Technology and the numbers forward. And the growth and the things that ultimately comes down to help your patients to get something that's more predictable, that they could see it and it's lasting.
Well, and my big thing is, as I yank Hulsinger's headphones out, is by doing that, not only do we save money, but we get to pass that savings on to the patient, right? Like we were talking about earlier, to do that, you know, to do a custom abutment and a crown from a lab, you could be upwards of $500, $600. Well, to do it in office with a CEREC or with an E40 or whatever, I can get my cost down to like $180. So now we can charge $3,000 to replace a whole tooth, implant, abutment, crown, and all. The patients say they're saving money. We're saving money. Everybody kind of wins, which is such a benefit.
For sure. Yeah. I'm looking at these koozies as we speak. This is badass. We're going to go to Hinman, by the way, next week, huh?
If you've got a, if you want a koozie, a millennial dentist koozie, and you're listening to the podcast, send us a Facebook message, Instagram message, and your address, and we'll send you a free koozie.
I want to ask you this. Tell me one thing you love about dentistry, but tell me also one thing that you hate about dentistry, or you don't enjoy it, or you dislike it. Because everybody we talk about, we love our job, we love our jobs, we love our jobs. But tell me one thing, and that's a cool segment we're going to start doing. Because we,
I like that.
It's cool. Like we always talk about, I love it. But let's talk about one thing that you dislike and one thing that you love. If you had to kind of, now I'm talking general, everything in dentistry.
Yeah, I love the relationships that I've developed over the years. And I think Sully's got to see that, and that's what's really cool, because we have a number of patients that saw my grandfather, my father, myself, and now him. And you know, a couple of them have even said he better get busy with number five here, because they're not going to last that long.
Yeah, they're like 92 years old. Like, yeah. Look.
You know, that number that's seen all four of us is dwindling just by nature. We've got a large number that have seen three of us, my father, myself, and him.
That's amazing.
And that's really cool.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's awesome.
And
so,
the patients take as much excitement in that as we do.
Well, and that's an advantage. I mean, there's no beating around. I'm not going to sit here and say that, like, that's huge. You know, you can't replicate that. But what you can replicate that what we've done is pushing forward, investing in the technology, supporting each other, because Dad will tell you he's making more money and having more fun doing dentistry than he was 2 or 3 years ago.
No question. But
ultimately what I think all older dentists want to have, right?
I will say this too. Sully's had to cut the mustard himself. Yes, he's had advantages. He's had some good opportunities. But if he wasn't doing what he's doing and doing and how he's doing it and treating these patients the way they need to be treated, he wouldn't have the success he's doing either. You know, I can be in the hall, I can walk around, I can go behind him and say, oh, he's going to do okay. But if he's not doing it day in, day out, you know, you're going to get one shot at it, basically his case. And most of these people, you know, have come back and been super thrilled with what he's done. And, you know, it's like, oh, you're going to see Sully now.
He's not afraid. Okay. He's not afraid of it. And that's one thing I love about him, because he's a go-getter and a hustler. He hustles, mm-hmm. And he's not afraid. I mean, you show him a case, you're like, yeah, I want to do it. Like, and that's, I love that about him, because.
Well, I've got his back and he's got mine. And so it's really been good.
Sure.
You know, we're not.
Except for sinus lifts.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, that comes later. I mean, that's the good thing. You said the fun stuff. Now tell me the dislike and the something you don't like about
this. I think the biggest dislike would be,
I got a couple.
Some of the issues you have to deal with staff.
Okay.
You know, some of the issues where you have to deal. And I've been very fortunate over the years to have a very loyal staff and a very good staff. You know, there again, I don't micromanage them.
Uh-huh.
So I tend to have staff that stay here a long time, that are very loyal, that enjoy coming to work.
Now, the staff, you say the management, the dislike, is it comes from you managing them or you talking about their being like... Tell me a little bit more, like, what is the dislike?
You know, sometimes you get just some of the issues of, you know, they want either more money or more time off or, you know.
So that's something you don't enjoy.
Well, and Dad's
that's not my forte.
He's a people pleaser.
Right.
You know, and he likes, uh-huh. And so, and you love the staff and you want it. So it's hard to be office, you know, that's one of the unique things about dentistry, right? Yeah. You're the manager, the boss, the entrepreneur,
sure,
and the guy that does it.
So you think if having a team or a trainer or a consult company that takes care of that for you, would that make it easier for you? Or you think ultimately it's always going to be down to you deciding?
I think it's ultimately going to be down to Sully and I as partners. I think the management company, if I started out and had one of those from the beginning, it may be one thing. I think the staff would not react well to that now, because we do have good relationships. I mean, this is my family. I mean, I spend more time with my staff than I do with my wife. You know, and so if I don't enjoy being with them, it's not a pleasant day. And so I've tried to.
And we're very fortunate to have a really good staff. You know, and that's a huge part of my success.
What do you do? What's the success? What is your secret to having this staff that's loyal? You said something about them loving it here. Tell me something.
That's a good question.
I think it's the same thing with Sully. I think I don't micromanage. I don't try to control. I don't get in their business. I train them. I trust them. I let them work and do their job. The hygienist, the assistants, the front desk. You know, when the front desk come to me, if they've got an issue with a patient, you know, I back the front desk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may say, you know, you could have done this a little differently, but I don't go underneath them and undercut them, shame them.
Right.
I think that's real important that they feel appreciated and valued.
And does it, it's just out of random, like when Sully came in and you had your staff, was he as respectful? I'm just saying, like, as how much you cared, like, because this was his first time being here or working with them. As a millennial, how was that relationship? How did you guide him? Or how? Tell me about it.
I've learned a lot.
He's learned a lot. I think at the same time, just like with dentistry, I've tried to, you know, we had times where we'd sit in here with a staff member and the two of us, and they would have an issue with something he was doing. And I sat here quietly and let the two of them hash it out, because he needed to do that and see things from their perspective without me jumping in there and taking over, running cover. You know,
so you try to talk it out in the room with you being present,
involved,
right?
Okay.
And what he was good at was one of the things that he's good at is like picking battles. Like some stuff, it's like, is it really worth getting upset about them about this? Like, you know, like there'll be times where they suck up a membrane with the suction, you know, which is $100 that you just lost, or dropping bone, or you know. And you know, being understanding, you know, like it happens, you know, at the same time, let's not let it happen again kind of thing. Versus I was probably came in much more, we also have different styles. I'm much more upfront managerial. Like I'd rather have a much more active role than he would. And there's pros and cons to both strategies, both ways of doing it. And so I had to learn a little bit sometimes to back off. You know,
and he has. Learned that,
which has been good. But then there's also been a lot of things that we've been able to implement because you know they're happy to have me here and implementing because I do take a more proactive, active role. So I don't think it's a bad. You know,
I feel like we could do a whole episode on this issue right here.
No, I mean what we're talking about. A lot of stuff because everybody's like, I love my job, and then you start talking about them, everything they say is negative, and I'm like, well, tell me something, like, let's talk about it. Now, Sully, tell me something that you love about dentistry that you do and something that you're not necessarily a fan of right now. That could change maybe next year. I just want right now, what's going on in your head with the dentistry, one thing that you dislike, one thing that you love.
The thing I probably love is our ability to, you know, change someone's life from a smile perspective, whether that's replace a tooth, give them a smile they've always wanted, you know, because for us, we take for granted, I think a little bit the skill we have. And so, and that's one thing I love about what we do personally, Dad and I, is we sometimes give away more dentistry than we should, or we wheel and deal too much to make it affordable. Because ultimately it's like, at the end of the day, I love placing implants. So like, I'd rather place the implant for a little less money than not place it at all or whatever. So I think the biggest thing I love right now and am enjoying is just the excitement of taking a cone beam, seeing what's there, seeing the new patient, seeing what the next kind of thing is to kind of get excited and plan the case and see it evolve. That's probably the biggest thing I'm enjoying right now.
I mean, you're in a leadership role right now. You're doing a lot of things that you're controlling that patient's mouth. That's something that's
and
amazing.
I love about being a GP and getting to do that, right?
Right.
I
mean, like, and you're using technology to help you guide through that, to make the patients more, I mean, everything. So That's awesome. That's amazing.
That's huge. Thing I dislike, two things. I hate fillings so much. Okay. I hate fillings.
Did you hate them in dental school as well?
I don't know. I don't think I did enough to like hate them. I hate fillings. Oh my gosh, I hate fillings.
This is it's an eye-opening for me and also for a lot of folks that I know that they own or share practices with their family, or they don't for different reasons. But what you guys have done here is an amazing job of, I mean, it's a story. It's really in a story. Fifth generation now dentist.
And I think it's a trust factor. And I think as a millennial dentist, your job is to educate and convince the senior doctor that he can trust you, that you're qualified, that it's okay. And I think that's, Sully obviously had an easier time of that than some would, but at the same time, I've got to learn to give him that trust and believe in him. And we've done that well together. And I think that's where our success has come from.
And I think that big thing there, like you just touched on, was where the millennial dentist coming in with the guy who's been doing it for 20, 30 years is being teachable.
Don't be entitled. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't be entitled. Come in teachable. But like, yeah, you did 4 years of dental school, but I mean, this guy has experience and you can learn from that.
And shave and did a haircut and look presentable.
Get out of here.
At least on the first interview.
It's awesome. Maybe the first interview.
All right.
I love it.
Sounds good. Everybody.
On the back of the koozie. Let's read it. Work smarter, not harder.
I love it. Millennial Podcast. Next time. See you.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.